Modern Love, the podcast, is supported by...
Produced by the iLab at WBUR, Boston.
From the New York Times and WBUR Boston, this is Modern Love. Stories of love, loss, and redemption. I'm your host, Meghna Chakrabarty. When you're dealing with a tragedy, it can feel like you'd do anything for an ordinary day. Monica Wesolowska felt like that once, before she realized how challenging those ordinary days can be. Jennifer Goodwin reads Monica's essay, Clinging to Each Other, We Survived the Storm. She's known for her work in Big Love and Once Upon a Time, and you can see Jennifer in The Twilight Zone on CBS All Access.
Every couple has a story, and this was ours. We were prepared to weather storms. For our wedding, we skipped the tissue paper and cream-colored cardstock of standard invitations. Instead, we glued a photograph of ourselves swing dancing onto a black-and-white picture of stormy ocean waves. If marriage meant sticking through the hardest of times, we believed we could do it. Barely out of our 20s, we thought we had seen enough of life to know. After all, on the day David asked me out for a date at the office where we worked, I told him my brother had just died and my father was near death. Instead of fleeing, David got down on one knee by my swivel chair and said, "That must be hard." For years, our story suited us. For years, it explained us as a couple. Despite our differences, I loved books, he loved technology, I told stories, he wanted facts, I needed a tidy house, he needed a clean one. We were a team when it came to the important things in life. Though we paid attention to different details, we saw the same big picture. Life was hard. Being together made it better. This faith in ourselves kept us strong when, 3 years from our wedding, the worst of all possible storms hit us with the birth of our first son, Sylvan. Healthy, full term, Sylvan seemed perfect at birth. Olive-skinned, long-lashed, and as handsome as his father. But 6 hours later, the doctors knew something was wrong. Within a day, something seemed seriously wrong. By the end of the week, we understood that Sylvan had been so completely brain damaged during labor that he could not survive without interventions. And even these would ultimately prove futile. Left alone in the little room where we had received the news, we turned to each other. "Whatever happens," I said, "don't let this ruin our marriage." We needn't have worried. Not then. In crisis, we were solid as a couple. Driving back and forth between hospital and home, our faces pale and puffed with tears, we barely had time to eat and sleep, let alone put on our dancing clothes, but still we moved to a common rhythm. In Sylvan's chart, the social worker noted this. Couple treats each other tenderly. She was watching us. Everyone was. With Sylvan on life support, with every day a new decision about how to treat him, they were all making sure we were equipped to guide our son through however brief a life. And we were. Whatever petty arguments we might have had as new parents over car seats, strollers, and baby bottles shrank away. To care for Sylvan, we cared for each other. To love Sylvan, we loved each other too. With life so unbelievably tenuous, we paid attention to what mattered. For 38 days, nothing mattered more than our love for Sylvan. Like any parent's love-struck with their newborn, we stroked his skin, sniffed his loamy head, and marveled at his starfish hands. But unlike ordinary parents who hold hope for a future adult within their love for a child, Sylvan as a newborn was all we had. Knowing our time was brief, we loved him fully in the present. He taught us how to do that. For all our rage and grief, joy overwhelmed us in his presence. For 38 days, Sylvan was our life. And then, once he was gone, the habit of new love continued. On a reverse sort of honeymoon, grief united us. Stripped of petty complaints, we felt grateful for everything, for waking up to sunlight on the bed, for each other's hands beneath the sheets. With the dark humor of comrades in suffering, we called any kind of parenthood, other than what we had endured, parenting light. We had held our child until the end. After that, what could be so bad about having to change 3 dirty diapers in a row at the zoo? What parent could resent a child staying home from school with the flu? If we were lucky enough to be parents together again, we figured we would never complain about anything. 10 years later, Monday morning, at 8:10, there seemed plenty to complain about. For starters, we had overslept. Outside, habitual morning fog veiled the street. Inside, Miles and Ivan, now 8 and 6, wrestled over a cardboard box in our little front hall. David was yelling at them to stop wrestling. I was yelling at David to stop yelling, and the boys were just yelling. In 15 minutes, I was expected up at the school for career day to talk to first graders about my life as a writer. 10 years from the death of Sylvan, I had published a story. In fact, my memoir had only just arrived, 48 copies in a box so heavy we had left it right where the postal worker had plunked it down, and it was over this box that Miles and Ivan now wrestled. With a scowl, David pulled the boys apart. He asked Miles where his shoes were. When Miles didn't know, David blamed me. I reminded him that he had misplaced the children's homework. He said he was heading out. I said I should be the one to go ahead. So there we were, trapped in the front hall together, behaving as if marriage with children, which we had worked so hard for, was almost unendurable. When had this happened to us? Back when we had vowed to stick with each other through sickness and health? We had imagined crises requiring heroic nursing, not the patience needed to endure the simple sound of another person's snotty nose. Back then, for better or for worse, sounded like a long-term challenge, not something that could happen on a daily basis. In the months after Sylvan died, we had still been tender with each other. And in the first 2 years of Miles's life, the same. And even after Ivan was born and exhaustion flattened us, we had still been a grateful team, knowing that the effort of keeping a toddler and a newborn out of trouble was temporary and essential and something we were lucky enough to do. But under the growing weight of family logistics, everything but the mundane had been squeezed from us until all our interactions, from good to bad, seemed reduced, as Miles once put it in his eagerness to join in, to talk about stoves and beds. Clearly, we needed to get past the front hall. Miles and Ivan were circling the box again, ready to wrestle. I grabbed each boy by an arm. Up at school, they were working on writing small moment stories about their own lives. Proud of my book, they had wanted me to come and read a passage from the end where the four of us play together happily in the backyard sun. They had grinned to see themselves in print. For Miles and Ivan, my memoir seemed simple. I was sad about Sylvan dying, but happy about them. As we struggled together in the front hall, however, I felt the distance between us and that happy ending. 10 years on, we were living something almost harder to describe, something less dramatic, something so common people hardly ever talked about it. We were in the midst of an ordinary life. Separated from each other, Miles found his shoes, Ivan put on his sweater. I shooed them onto the porch where David stood, impatiently jiggling his legs. In its quixotic way, the fog was already thinning. At the end of the block, the slate-blue outlines of trees were filling in with green. Ivan was disappointed. He had wanted to walk blind through the fog. Miles whined about the coming heat and said he should have worn shorts. I asked whose fault it was that we were now 17 minutes late. David said that if we couldn't stop complaining, we should walk the rest of the way without any talking at all. The threat worked. In the silence that descended, even our footsteps sounded content. I clutched my book to my chest. Sometimes it seemed as if loving Sylvan had been the best thing about us as a couple. But this wasn't our only story. Up at the school, I was going to tell children that to write, they just needed to pay enough attention to their lives. But I had been forgetting to take my own advice. Here we were, together still, taking care of two children when the seas seemed calm. And it wasn't easy. In fact, parenting light was almost the hardest thing we had ever done, in part because we didn't know how it would end. But how lucky that we didn't. How lucky to be in the midst of it all. Just then, David noticed the sun. He pointed up. From branch to branch of the tree overhead, pale light seemed to drip like paint toward us. It was a small moment, ordinary, easy to miss. But when we stopped to pay enough attention, it belonged.
That's Jennifer Goodwin reading Monica Wesolowska's essay, Clinging to Each Other, We Survived the Storm. We'll catch up with Monica right after this. It's been 5 years since Monica's piece was published and over a decade since her son Sylvan died.
He would have been 16 this year. And that was a real shocker for me. I think for any parent, somehow that's a really significant age. And so each year, I know he would have been a year older. And I don't spend a lot of time thinking, oh, he would have been doing this or he would have been doing that. I accept that he's gone. But something about him turned, the fact that he would have been 16 really punched me in the gut. I could imagine him suddenly as a person about to launch in the world. His birthday is on April 27th. His death day is June 4th. Every year for these 6 weeks, I'm a little bit emotionally up and down. And I think it must be that buried grief or that way that the body kind of remembers what was happening 16 years ago and how awful those days were, and how at the same time, I would love to have a second to hold him again.
Mm-hmm. Monica told us that her second pregnancy with her son Miles was very different than her first.
In my first pregnancy, I would walk around and enjoy the way that the world celebrated my pregnancy with me. And the second time, people would come up and do that thing that they do. Wow, is this your, how far along are you? Is this your first baby? And I couldn't, I'm a super honest person, and I just could not lie. So I'd say, no, it's my second, my first one died. People really backed away from me, but it was the only way that I could figure out how to deal with it. And I had some really lovely conversations with people because of that.
She says the first week after Miles was born was the hardest.
I would just hold him, and I would cry about Sylvan. It was really strange because I missed Sylvan, and I was very in love with Miles at the same time. I was very relieved after the first week. Something kind of lifted, and I started to believe that Miles was really here, and that kind of hesitance around him lifted.
Monica's kids are 15 and 12 now, and she and her husband have been married for more than 18 years.
What interested me in the piece was exploring the way that David and I have this kind of mythology about our ability to deal with hard times. By mythology, I don't mean necessarily that it's not true. It is true. But it doesn't necessarily serve us during ordinary times. And I wouldn't say that we're a couple that speaks to each other in the tenderest way. I feel like we are often frustrated with each other. We're often brusque. We are very different from each other, as I say in the piece. And so in ordinary times, that's really obvious. So I guess that line, the best of us came out in crisis. It's true. That was the best of us. And sometimes we have to use that as a touchstone to remind each other to be kind to each other in ordinary times as well.
And Monica has found that the pressures of ordinary parenting have eased as our kids have grown.
I am finding that parenting older kids is not soul-sucking in the same way for me. Just because my kids give me a little more space. I had such a hard time with having my entire physical and kind of mental world consumed by young children. And now that they've given me just a little bit of space, I feel that I'm returning to myself.
And Monica says her essay reminds her of something important too.
All of life is pretty rough. I mean, we're working hard, and some of us are suffering far more than other people. But all of us, I think, are able to get through it if we pay attention to those very small moments, because those tiny moments that are fine are to be valued, because you never know what's going to happen the next second.
That's Monica Wesolowska. She's the author of Holding Sylvan, A Brief Life. She's at work on a picture book now. She lives in California with her family. More right after this. Here's Daniel Jones, editor of the Modern Love column for the New York Times.
In our marriage vows, you know, we often talk about sticking together through the worst and through the tests that marriage and parenthood and family throw our way. And this essay really turns that on its head. And the worst for them brought them together. And then she contrasts that with the sort of mundane routine of marriage and parenthood. It was just one of these where it sort of surprises me as I'm reading it to see, you know, how true that can be with different couples. And it's a sort of indifference and a sort of pettiness that can tear apart a relationship more than tragedy.
And here's Jennifer Goodwin.
I'm unsure what the effect of this piece would have been on me before I was a mother. But now that I have two children and know the ordinary, mundane day very well, I found this so recentering. And I had a lot of trouble getting through it. I found it so upsetting, and that's exactly why I felt I needed to tackle it.
Thanks again to Jennifer for reading this week's piece. You can see her now in The Twilight Zone on CBS All Access. She'll also be starring later this year in Why Women Kill and Dolly Parton's Heartstrings. Next week, Jackie Weaver.
I had been single for 24 years. Just putting that ring on my finger felt odd, almost embarrassing. As later, it would be difficult to say, my husband, or refer to myself as Jim's wife. To me, marriage meant trouble, failure, pain. Why risk that again?
Modern Love is a production of The New York Times and WBUR, Boston's NPR station. It's produced, directed, and edited by Caitlin O'Keefe. Original scoring and sound design by Matt Reed. Iris Adler is our executive producer. Daniel Jones is the editor of Modern Love for The New York Times and advisor to the show. Special thanks to Samantha Hennig, Anya Stremian, and Mia Lee at The New York Times. The idea for the Modern Love podcast was conceived by Lisa Tobin. Additional music courtesy of APM. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. See you next week.